Hey, y'all. Oh my God, Joaquin Phoenix really is here, and A Quiet Place is breaking records all over the place. Stay tuned for the convo. Giving me that 2001 Odyssey. Ooh, all right. Well, hey, welcome, y'all. I am Carla Renata. And this is the 7th episode of Black Tomato.
Yes, you're right.
Yay!
7.
7th episode of Black Tomato, 7 weeks strong. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to all our viewers for making that happen for us. We really, really, really appreciate you. So I just want to tell you a really funny story before we start. So one of our engineers here at Black Hollywood Live, he went to the movies to see You Were Never Really Here. And he ran into Joaquin Phoenix. I think that's hilarious that he ran into him and he was like, oh, hey, liked you in the movie. He was like, yeah, okay, hey, how you doing? And he said, Anthony said he was like this afterwards. It was hilarious. But we're going to talk about that in a minute. But you wanted to talk about A Quiet Place because, as I have said on this show many times, I do not do horror. I don't like being scared. I don't like not being able to sleep at night, so I do not see horror films. But Scott loves horror films.
I do.
And he saw A Quiet Place. And I was thinking, I wonder if A Quiet Place is going to be able to do what Get Out did this Oscar season, the upcoming Oscar season.
Oh, I don't think so.
Really?
I don't. No.
Why?
Because I don't think
John Krasinski and Emily Blunt.
I love him. I love her, but I don't think it has. It's not the same thing.
Okay.
The reason why Get Out worked so well and why it kind of had so much legs was it was about social commentary. Like, underneath the horror elements of that movie, there was social commentary.
Right.
It started a conversation.
Right.
And people really caught on to that, and there was a lot to talk about.
This is
very much a horror movie, so it's going to have a very good run. There's going to be a sequel. I can guarantee you that.
You think it's
going
to be a sequel?
I will guarantee you that right here on Black Tomatoes. I will guarantee it. Breaking news, everyone. There will be a sequel to
Black Tomatoes. But wait, how are you going to have a sequel to A Quiet Place when you didn't you tell me there was, like, what, all the 3 lines of dialogue in the movie?
There's most of the movie, about 80% of it is told through sign language. So,
yes. Okay.
So, or that, or whispering. So there's a couple scenes where people actually talk, and I'm not going to spoil the movie for people who haven't seen it, but...
Oh, child, everybody's seen it by now.
All right. So, like, in the movie, they basically, like, they go to, like, a waterfall when they want to talk because the natural noise, you know, offsets the natural noise of someone's voice.
Right.
So they're able to communicate with one another that way. So they have to go to either, like, a lake, or they go to a waterfall. They have to find some place where the natural noise is louder than their actual voice.
Okay.
So that's how they can communicate. So that's why it's only 20% of the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we have a little clip that we can show real quick. Let's watch that and see what's happening. See, I'm scared. Am I going to jump out of my chair?
You might.
See, I can't.
Who are we if we can't protect them? We have to protect them.
What the hell is that? Okay, that's enough. What is that?
Okay, so the entire movie is based around these creatures that exist, and the reason why they exist is that there was something happened to humans. We don't know what. We don't know what happened. And that's what's great about the movie, because unlike a lot of movies where they try to over-explain things, this movie just picks up. You have this family. And you follow them, and they're just trying to survive. And there's these creatures would have incredible hearing, and that's why they have to be quiet. The whole movie is based around these creatures finding them if they make any noise. And the way that the movie, you know, showcases the use of sound is amazing. Because, you know, let's say if I hit this cup and it goes like that, that is when the monster comes. Just something as small as that is when the monster would come. So they have to be very careful, and there's a lot of little things like that. So it's the opposite of horror movies, where, you know, horror movies like jump scare, it's like, oh, loud noise, you know, door slam, whatever. This is like unexpected. There'll be something like that, where someone drops a toy, see, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what the hell?
And that is why and let me just qualify. I love me some John Krasinski, and I really love some Emily Blunt. I mean, all the way back to the Devil Wears Prada days.
Yeah.
But honey, I love you, Emily Blunt, but I will not be endorsing you in no for horror movie because I can't hang. I cannot hang. Why do you think this particular film has resonated so much with audiences because it did really well at the film festivals, and now it's kind of translated into that box office success too.
I think it's funny because I think we talked about it on the mm-hmm. show a couple episodes back.
Yeah, we did.
The movie was projected to be a Cloverfield spinoff movie. That was the everyone on the internet, our colleagues were like, oh, it's probably another Cloverfield movie. And then what happened was when it premiered at South by Southwest, everyone didn't really know what to expect from the movie because John Krasinski basically has had a decent career as an independent director, but his movies haven't been that rave reviews. Like, they haven't received rave reviews. They've been kind of like middle of the road.
Right.
So for him to kind of do a Jordan Peele, so to speak, where he stepped outside the realm that he's known for, and to do something that is such a unique stance on horror movies, which is just being intense, being silent. I mean, this is like an independent film.
Right.
You know, you're watching a movie where there's subtitles and sign language for 80% of it. I cannot stress that enough. You have to be quiet when you watch this movie. Like, this is like the no popcorn zone movie, you know, none of that, because any little noise in the theater takes away from the experience. And that's why I think it caught on, because we're so used to loud noises and people screaming, and this is just something where that makes up about 10 to 15% of this movie,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to 75% of the movie that we're used to seeing.
Okay, well, our horror fans that love watching Black Tomatoes, go support A Quiet Place. I won't be supporting A Quiet Place because I don't like horror movies and I don't want to be scared and I want to go to sleep tonight. So there's that. So speaking of intense, let's start talking about You Were Never Really Here with my boy Joaquin Phoenix. Now, let me just talk about Joaquin Phoenix for a second. I love me some Joaquin Phoenix.
He's a master.
I'm just saying, it seems to me like no matter what role he takes on, he just kind of inhabits it in a way that no other actor in Hollywood, in my opinion, is able to do. I mean, look at what he did with Walk the Line when he played Johnny Cash. He should have won an Oscar for that.
He was really good in that movie.
But and You Were Never Really Here, he plays like this soldier turned FBI agent that is now a hired hitman who specifically is going into the sex trafficking situations and rescuing these young girls. Now, the thing that I love about Joaquin Phoenix in this movie is the fact that usually when we see a movie where there's a hired hitman, they're chiseled, they're all buff, you know, they got the six-pack going on, they got the guns and the arms, he got a belly.
Yes.
He looks like a regular old middle-aged man. That's a hitman. I love that because it made his character more realistic for me, right?
Yes.
And the other thing that made me, it's not funny, but it was funny to me, and it's a personal thing. But every time he's also suffering from post-traumatic stress from, you know, being a soldier. So he has these moments where he has these flashbacks of his father being verbally abusive or whatever, or being abusive to his mom. And when he has these flashbacks, they always show him in some scene where he's trying to take himself out. And every time he tries to do it, he always gets interrupted by his mother's voice.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that made me laugh because that happens to me in my life more often than not. So I found personal humor with that particular moment. But what were some things about you, I mean, about the film that you resonated with?
I appreciated how honest it was. And I mean, you didn't really get a lot of backstory on Joaquin's Phoenix's character.
Yeah, Joe.
So Joe, like, and we don't even know if that was really his name.
Right. I love that, though.
Yeah, I love that, too.
I love that, yeah.
Right. And I mean, because there's a lot of mystery to the character. There's a lot of mystery to what's going on in the film. The flashback scenes, basically, again, I think we've talked about this before in different movies, like, showcase, like, when something traumatic happens in someone's life, how hard it is to forget it and how it follows you pretty much everywhere you go. And to do this kind of work that he's doing, how traumatizing it is and how that affected him mentally in every stage of his life, I thought that was really powerful about that this movie and his performance.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I would see it again. I would see it a couple of times because I felt like there was stuff that I missed. There was so much going on, especially toward that last 30, 45 minutes. Oh,
the ending confused Ooh. Me. Like, I mean, and we're not going to spoil this one because no. we're not going to really talk about it at all because no. it's only playing in 3 theaters right now and we want people to see this.
Yeah, because it has a wide release on April 20th.
Yeah.
So right now it's only in New York and L.A.
Right. I don't know what to make of this movie when it ended. Like, it gets violent and then there's a conversation that happens and then it's...
And then you're kind of
yeah,
like...
Yeah, then you're like left with the, when the credits roll and you're like,
You're like, what was that? Maybe it's going to be a sequel. Maybe they...
No.
You don't think there's going to be a sequel? You don't think maybe he'll save some more little girls and kill some more people?
No. not in an independent movie by Lynn Ramsey. No.
This is Lynn Ramsey's 4th film?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Did you see We Need to Talk About Kevin?
I did not see that. I heard it was really good.
It's incredible. Ezra Miller is amazing in that.
I might have to check that one out. Scott Menzel.
You should.
I forgot to say your name earlier, so Scott Menzel.
It's okay.
I just started talking. Scott, let me just say, Scott is the best co-host ever because I will screw up and he's just like, okay, I'm just going to go with the flow. I'll just shake my head and let her do her thing.
There's no problem with that.
I love you for that. And so I really, you know what? Before, let's just give people a little sneak peek.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because probably no one knows what this is.
Yeah.
You see this girl?
See, he got a belly.
Is she inside? Security, how many are there? Close your eyes.
New York State Senator has been found dead in an apparent suicide.
And I don't know what the fuck's going on here.
Child, I don't either. And we're going to leave you right there, Joaquin.
The thing that we need to talk about, what we haven't talked about with this movie, is how impressively scary they made a hammer.
Oh, right?
Yeah. What kind
of hammer? Like, it was a ball hammer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it made that Ooh. So scary compared to like a gun and everything else and
I
a knife.
Was like he didn't have it, right, he didn't even really have a gun. He just had that hammer. He was taking people out with that ball hammer. I was like, "Ooh, I wouldn't want to see him in a dark alley. That was not cute."
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
But you see that Scott and I are like really excited about the film, so you guys really need to try to check it out. So the next one I wanted to talk about a little bit, we were discussing it briefly before we came in, is this little movie called The Miracle Season. Now, apparently, I seem to be the only critic on the face of the earth that likes this movie, but y'all know me by now. You know that I mostly like everything. Like, there's very few things that I dislike, but when I dislike it, I really kind of dislike it. But The Miracle Season, I kind of love because it kind of tugged at my heartstrings. It's about this volleyball team in Iowa that loses their star player during the senior year, and they were the reigning champions. And so they're going into the next season, and it's looking like before she passed, it was looking like they were on the road to victory for a double victory, but then she dies, and there's all this complexity stuff. Now, if critics went in on it, I'm imagining that's probably the reason why, because they spent a little too much time focusing on how everybody was all up in their feelings about her dying. And I get in real life that that's something that people spend an enormous amount of time focusing on emotionally, because you just don't get over somebody dying overnight. But this is a movie. It's 2 hours long.
Right, right.
So, you know, you got to move it along. But I like the fact that it showed that all these young girls weren't hating on each other. They weren't belittling each other. They pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and they came together as a team of women to get a back-to-back championship in the name of Caroline. The girl's name was Caroline Line. They called her Line for short, Found. And the thing that was really heartbreaking is the fact that not only did she pass, but like the day after she passed, her mother passed too. And then, so her dad went from going to all these games and supporting his daughter to losing his wife and his daughter like in one weekend. It was horrible. But, and that was kind of like the downer of it. But the upside of it was watching these girls play these volleyball games and kicking butt. Like they went from, they started out the season, I think they lost like the first five games and then they went 15-0. I was like,
wow.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's called the miracle season, because these little girls, they went in, and the coach was played by Helen Hunt. And I've never seen Helen Hunt look like this. Like, Helen Hunt looked as homely could be. She looked so homely and so pitiful, and like the last of the old maids, she did. She looked pitiful. But she was letting us have it, and mostly because most of what Helen Hunt did as this character in the movie, who's a real person, the coach, Coach Brez is what they called her. Helen Hunt basically stifled the emotion, because I'm guessing that the real person she was portraying wasn't an overly emotional person, and she kind of kept it in.
Yeah.
There was this one scene in particular where they were at the barn the last time everybody saw Caroline alive. They had a big party there, and they went back to this barn to have a party before they started their next season to kind of, you know, cheer everybody up and egg them on to try to win the games. And I remember the coach walking into the barn, going up the stairs, and she heard them singing the song Sweet Caroline, and she literally came back down the steps and left.
Huh.
And I was just like, oh. So there were lots of moments like that where it was really
heartbreaking. Was the movie very religious?
No.
No? Okay.
No, it wasn't very religious. I was thinking it was going to be because, hence the word miracle.
Right.
But no, the miracle is the fact that those dolls won back-to-back championships after losing their star player. That's what the miracle was.
Interesting.
And they did it by losing like three quarters of the first part of the season and then just slam dunking it for the rest of the season.
Because this movie was directed by the lady who did Soul Surfer, which I did not like.
Nobody likes Soul Surfer.
No.
Wasn't Carrie Underwood or somebody in it?
Yeah, someone was in it. But it was just, the reason why I asked about the religion thing was the main reason why I didn't like Soul Surfer was not the story, because I felt like the story itself was very inspirational. It was just the level of, like, God talk and how, like, they almost, like, made it like, oh, it's a miracle that this happened. And
no.
It was, like, really strange because it's like, no, not really. Like, it wouldn't have been a miracle if someone bit off her leg or arm, whatever it was in that movie. It was just...
Why somebody got to bite off an appendage?
I know. And they were like, oh, it's okay. And it's like, no, it's not. But, like, it was too glorified in that movie, and I felt like it wasn't very honest.
Yeah, in this movie, religion wasn't really addressed. Like, they didn't throw it in your face. Like, I think God might have been mentioned a couple of times,
sure,
but they didn't throw it in your face. The miracle in this particular film literally had to do with the fact that these young ladies overcame all odds that were thrown their way and got that second championship season against all odds. I mean, I'm not a sports person. I don't really watch that many sports movies, and I'm not someone that was engaged in sports as a young person or as a young adult. So whenever I watch somebody doing something that I don't know how to do, I'm like, oh, yay. You did that. You did a great job. I think we might have a little clip from that, possibly.
Talk to him. Lead.
Why me? You're a best friend. Girls are looking at you.
I'm taking her spot.
And you're making it your own.
The last thing that Lyme said to me was that this was going to be our year. Even if we could win one game, shouldn't we try?
This is volleyball. I need to know if you're serious.
You think this is pressure? How are you going to win if you can't even handle practice?
We are this close to doing something no one thought we could do.
Remember when playing used to be fun?
I try not to think about it.
If we run the board, we got a shot at state.
You mean to win?
For Caroline.
How many is the board?
15.
You see what I mean? That was awesome.
It doesn't look that bad to me.
No, I'm telling you, it's a good movie. It's a good movie. It's the pacing is a little funky in some spots.
Okay.
But it's a good film. It really is a good film. And I liked Helen Hunt in it. And the young lady that played the lead, that played Kelly, she was phenomenal. She was really, 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 really good. And I think they have an organization now that is named for Caroline Found. Where they raise money, and I can throw that up online after in the chat room when you guys talk to me. I'll put it up there, and you can see it there. But it was a good movie. I liked it. It was very
inspirational. I never watched the trailer for it. I just kind of assumed because there was really no hype around it, and then the title, I was like, and then I looked at the director, and I'm like, oh, I'm done. but hey,
I can't stand you right now.
It could be okay.
And the other thing that I liked about this movie is that even though it's a sports movie about a girls' volleyball team, they didn't over-sexualize these young girls. Like, they look like young girls. They didn't have their shorts crawling up their butt. You know what I mean? Where the butt cheeks was hanging out. Yeah. I'm like, I don't need to see that when you're 14 years old on the volleyball team. No. I don't need to see all that. I really don't. So that's The Miracle Season, and that opened in theaters on Friday, April 6th, I believe.
Right, this Friday, too. Yeah.
So that opened, You Were Never Really Here, opened on the 6th. And now I'm going to talk about this. So I was telling Scott about Roxanne, before we came in. So for those of you that know your hip-hop, you know who Roxanne Shanté is. She was like the first lady of hip-hop soul at the age of 14. There were no young female MCs in Brooklyn doing it but her. She worked it out. She rocked it out. And I remember, I think it was not this past Sundance, but Sundance before.
Yes.
Sundance of 2017. I was there, and I really, really, really wanted to see the film there, but I didn't get an opportunity to. I just got to do the red carpet, and I got to do the red carpet, and I interviewed Roxanne Shanté, and I interviewed Nia Long, and I interviewed Curtis Cook, who I actually know from The Lion King. He plays Banzai in The Lion King in New York, and I was Shinzi in The Lion King here, and we've known each other for years, so to be able to interview him was, like, really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know, it was a lot of fun, and to interview Roxanne Shanté was a lot of fun, too, because she broke off a little rhyme for me about the movie. I wish I had it with me today, but I don't, but I'll play it for y'all next week, because it was dope. And then, Nia Long. Now, the movie itself, I felt like the movie could have been better. I felt like it very rapidly paced, glossed over her life and the stuff that was going on with her. So this is a young 14-year-old girl in New York who wants to rhyme, who wants to be in hip-hop, and her mother is an alcoholic. She's got three sisters. So it's four girls in a house with a mother who's an alcoholic, and this young 14-year-old is taking care of everybody, including the mother. That's a lot for a little girl that's 14 years old. So I'm thinking from what I saw in the movie that the rap was like an escape for her, basically. It was something that she enjoyed, but it was when she was doing that, she didn't have to think about how her sisters were getting to school.
They didn't showcase that?
That they did.
Okay.
That part of the movie, they showcased that very well.
Okay.
They showcased how she had to overcome being an adult at 14 years old to rise above and become what she did in the hip-hop world. They did show that. They showed the injustices that she had to deal with as a young woman in the hip-hop world. You know, it's the same injustices that women deal with all the time anyway, especially comedians and hip-hop artists. When you do a show, you know, the promoters don't want to pay you, and they got some BS excuse for why they don't have your money, and then you got to act like a crazy person out of the loony bin just to get your cash. So they showed her that. They showed that. They showed that that men in her life and in her mother's life, black men in particular, let them down time and time and time again. The most heartbreaking thing in that whole movie was a scene where this man her mother was involved with, the man that she was dating, him and the mother were pooling their funds together to get a house in New Jersey. And this woman had saved over 20 grand to put a down payment on a house, and homeboy bounced with the money. And had them packed up and everything. They were packed up and sitting out on the curb waiting for him, and he never showed up. And her mother was like, you know, I'm never going to get out of the projects. And then they kept showing man after man after man that she would get involved with. It would just be more of the same. So, you know, of course, Shantae gets to an age where, you know, she can, she knows what being attracted to a man is. And then the cycle starts to repeat itself to the point where the person that she becomes involved with had to be a good, I don't know, 10, 20 years older than her. And then he was a cokehead and a coke dealer. And then he did this, which I thought was, this is the most trifling thing that any human being could do, whether you're black, white, Latino, Asian, whatever. This fool snatched her kid and told her that if she wanted the kid back, he would give her son back for $10,000.
Wow.
She had to buy her own child back. Like, is this modern day slavery? What the hell? I was appalled when I saw that.
So what did you not like?
What did I not like? I didn't like the fact that it was glossed over. Like, you know, she was very instrumental in promoting the career of Nas, who's a very well known Grammy winning artist now. Biz Markie was her hype man. Like, how is Biz Markie anybody's hype man? Like, this is the same person that's saying that you want what I need off pitch. How is he anybody's hype man? I was like, I can't with you. So there was that. And then there were a lot of male artists that she was at 14 now,
yeah,
that she was instrumental because of the stature, because of her stature in the hip hop community. She was able to go, come with me and I'm going to help you do this. And I'm just like, I really wish they had focused more on the career part of her life so that we could see more of it. It was kind of glimpses of this happening, that happening, this person being here, that person being there, but they didn't really focus on them. And in some instances, you weren't really sure who they were. And some of them, I wasn't sure who they were until I went back on IMDb and looked up to see who was playing that part. And I'm like, oh, that person was supposed to be Biz Markie, or that person, because they literally mentioned Biz Markie one time in the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about that.
So this kind of brings up a bigger topic that's been in the news a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And we can just talk about it
because
it's a good thing to kind of end on. So there's been a lot of talk about Netflix and the movies that they pick and how they're very mediocre and they're very average. And Steven Spielberg said they shouldn't be nominated for any awards. And we had other conversation. There's a whole thing going on right now that they shouldn't play them at the Cannes Film Festival because...
Well, didn't Cannes ban it or something?
Exactly, they did. And then they have four movies now. And then there's like this back and forth going on. There's this dialogue happening. So I'm just curious, why do you think... I mean, Netflix knocks it out of the park with their TV shows. Mm-hmm. I'm bummed that they canceled Everything Sucks, which is a TV show.
I read that. That was a good show.
It was really good, and they just, like, completely let it go.
They shut it down, yeah.
But, I mean, they've done so many great shows. Like, we talked about The Crown, Orange is the New Black, House of Cards. I mean, there's some 13 Reasons Why. And then when you go to the movie side of things, and there's a new movie every week, no one talks about anything that Netflix does when it comes to movies.
This is the thing. So I think that this is just old school people in film hating. Because it's been my experience, especially as a person of color in America, not to bring it to that, but just to use this to make a point. As a person of color in America, a lot of times we get the reaction that we get out of fear. And people act a certain way out of fear of the unknown. And I think the same thing is happening with Netflix when it comes to movies. I think that people are acting out because it's fear of the unknown. The internet, look how far the internet and streaming and all of that has come in the last 10 years.
True.
It's been rapid fire fast. And we had Mudbound. Mary J. Blige got an Oscar nomination off of Mudbound, and Mudbound was a Netflix movie. So I think people are just getting scared because they're afraid that if the industry shifts to streaming movies on Netflix, what's going to happen to movies when they open in the theater? Because for a minute, they were doing the double thing. They were opening them in the theaters and streaming them online. And I think it's just the people that have all that money that are benefiting from these films as producers and studios. I think they're scared that somehow it's going to get into their pocketbook in a way that's not going to be reversed. That's what I think.
So do you think the quality of films on Netflix is as strong as ones that are at theaters and like at Amazon Studios, for example?
I think some of them are. I think a lot of them aren't.
Okay.
I think a lot of them aren't, but some of them are. Mudbound was excellent.
Yeah. I think, you know, the problem with Netflix, for me personally, is that they have no focus.
You don't think so?
So, like, in terms of, like, the movies that they choose, they just pick a whole bunch of random movies, they don't advertise them, and then they throw them up. And they're saying, like, oh, hopefully this someone will watch this. But there's no, like, campaigning for it. And there's no, like, real brand awareness. There's no audience. Like, that's the thing, right, where we were talking about, like, last week. Like, we know every time a Tyler Perry movie comes out, regardless of all the jackass critics who say that they don't like it, you know that it's going to do well. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's pretty much critic proof because there's an audience for it. Mm-hmm. Just like a movie like Blockers, even though I don't like it, there's an audience for it. It does well. With Netflix, there's really never this marketing campaign behind it. Like, you don't really know anything about the movie. You just all of a sudden something pops up and you're like, oh, what is this? And you watch the trailer and it's like half the time those trailers don't do anything to hook you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, as a, like,
that I agree with.
One of the things too, like, I was a Pee Wee Herman, for example, is a very big iconic character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had the TV show, he had the Pee Wee's Big Adventure, he had Pee Wee, Big Top Pee Wee, and he had a big comeback. Mm-hmm. And then they did that movie, and there was no promotion for it whatsoever.
There was absolutely no promotion for that, because I know somebody that was in that movie, and I saw that person post pictures online about it, and I thought, oh, okay. And they didn't say if it was coming on Netflix or where it was coming on. And I thought, oh, okay, I can't wait to see them in this movie. And I never saw it. I'm like, well, what studio released it?
That's the problem with most of these movies. Like, every week there's something new that comes on Netflix. And I mean, every once in a while you get a Beast of No Nation or you get a Mudbound. But there's so few and far between. Mm-hmm. If you go on their original titles list, there is a movie every single week. For, like, the last, like, I want to say at least the year. At least a full 365
I think they may be also trying to capitalize into the millennial audience as well. Because a lot of the millennials have the attention span of a gnat.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, and a lot of them don't watch television. A lot of them are on their phones or on their iPads or on their computers streaming stuff or AirPlay streaming from their iPad or their phone onto the television, watching movies and other content that way. So I think I stand by what I said before. I think the studios are getting scared because this is new. This is a whole, even the streaming thing, even that feature where you can use AirPlay on an Apple device to stream something to your television, that's fairly new. And I use it all the time. But that's new, and it's very convenient, and you can do it anywhere. You can project the stuff up on the wall somewhere. They are afraid that that's going to become the new normal, regardless of how many movies they have. And I think that they think by stopping the films from coming to Cannes, because once they stop it from coming to Cannes, then the next thing that's going to happen is, oh, we know y'all nominated Beast of No Nation and Mudbound, but this is a Netflix movie. Sorry, we can't do that again. You had those two over there. We can't let you do that again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
I think Netflix, though, you know, I agree with you on this. I think part of it is fear. And then I think part of it is not, they're greenlighting projects, they're taking projects, and they don't know who the audience is for. They don't know how to market it. They don't know how to advertise it. And I think they have to learn from, like, big studios, okay? So big studios, and Warner Brothers is a great example. They have some really great movies each year, and they have some really bad movies each year. And the Warner Brothers reps know this, and they said that, like, we have too many releases. Mm-hmm. Netflix is going overboard because they're doubling even what a studio would put out. Mm-hmm. What they need to do is they need to start with, like, say, a handful of titles and ones that they really feel passionate about, and they need to push them, and they need to market them properly. And I don't know if a movie like Bright is the answer. I know, like, a lot of people were talking about that movie. But if you want someone to subscribe to your service, if you want someone to know you for movies, a movie like Bright is going to have, like, no replay value. Most people did not like that movie.
Yeah, and I think Bright is probably what threw them under the bus.
Yes.
I think after they did Bright, because they brought Will Smith and Joel Edgerton into that, and I think that they thought by having those two big name stars attached to it, they thought, oh, this is, you know, we're going to, and coming right, and that was coming right off of the heels of, you know, Mudbound getting the attention, and Dee Rees and Mary J. Blige and all those people getting that attention in that film. I think they thought, okay, we're just going to ride this wave. And then that movie came out and people did not respond in kind. They went in on that film. So I think this is the industry's way of telling Ted Sarandos,
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We're not going to let you do this right now. So it'll be really interesting with the other festivals, and it'll be really interesting when the Oscars start, when we start to rev up with the Oscar conversation later on this year, whether Netflix has something that's going to be in that conversation and whether it even gets to that point because of what's happening at Cannes.
Right. I think that's a great point. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to know what Netflix is going to do, but I know the bottom line for any business is that they want to sell tickets. So they can sell tickets. They want us to sell the subscription. They want how many more people can we get on here to sign up for our service? And that's the reason why they're doing movies. Mm-hmm. So the only way that you can do that and do that successfully is do like you did with House of Cards and what you did with Orange is the New Black. You made it a priority. You made it an experience. Mm-hmm. So they have to do that with their films. Mm-hmm. They have to like pick a few. They have to really get behind them. They got to market them like crazy. They got to find that target audience and they got to work it. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I agree with you. I still think they doing stuff out of fear. I'm just going to add that in there. Still think they doing stuff out of fear.
Sure.
But what is not fearful is, you know, Maria Menounos has a show called Fridays with Maria Menounos on Sirius XM. And she is the founder of AfterBuzz TV. And she brought you and I here over to BHL Live. And you guys can listen to her every Friday. She's the big sister that you never really had. She's the bomb.com. We love her. Go listen to her on Fridays at Sirius XM. Tell her that Scott and Carla sent you there. And just have fun with some Maria Menounos on Friday. So what films do you think what buzz have you heard in the industry that people might want to know about coming up? Other than the whole Netflix debacle.
Oh, I think it's interesting how Marvel... this last TV spot for the Avengers mm-hmm. is pretty much making it seem like it's a direct spinoff or direct sequel of Black Panther.
Are they wrong for that? They're wrong for that.
Well, I love the jokes in the trailer, that's for sure. I mean, the TV spot. I mean, the whole thing, it's like, oh, this is what you were thinking? I thought of a Starbucks. Like, I really appreciated that.
They're wrong for that. I was going to say that. I'm like, oh, Marvel. But they're smart cookies, though.
Yeah.
They're smart cookies. I mean, now Black Panther is what, the
third.
So it came up.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's the third highest rated superhero movie ever?
No, it's the movie. It's the highest movie ever. It's like up with Titanic right now.
Shut up.
Yeah, that's where it's at in the United States history.
Wakanda forever. I'm just saying, Wakanda.
And it's going to keep going. I mean, you and I talked about this when we first talked on the first episode of this show.
Yeah, on the first episode of Black Tomatoes.
This movie has the legs. I mean, it's going to go all the way through until Avengers. And then it's questionable if it'll disappear when Avengers comes out, because then maybe people are going to watch Avengers and they're going to say, you know what? I'm going to go see Black Panther again. I don't know if it's going to be able to hold on that long, because I know they need to give up some of the screens for some other movies.
Right.
But it's possible. But I thought it was a really interesting move that Marvel's doing that. And I mean, there was so much focus on Black Panther. It's like, secondary characters. We don't need to worry about Iron Man anymore. America.
Because usually with the Marvel stuff, they usually pump up Iron Man Captain America a little bit more to get people to come see the Avengers stuff. I did notice they put all the emphasis on Black Panther. I was like, yeah, Wakanda forever. I was just saying, Wakanda. Oh, well, I think that does it for us with this edition of Black Tomatoes.
Great show.
I know. This was a great really discussion. Good show. My jaws hurt because my mouth was moving way too much. But anyway, I'm Carla Renata, the Curvy Critic. You can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. And where can we find you, Scott?
You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at The Other Scott M. And then go to We Live Entertainment to see all my written reviews. Thank you.
Yes. And you guys, go to iTunes and give us those 5-star reviews.
Yes,
give
please.
Us 5 stars, please, please, please. And if you want to catch some other episodes of Black Tomatoes, go to BHL on YouTube and catch us there. So until next time, we'll see you later. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.